So thank you, Anisha. And, and so also it's nice to evoke the idea of all the different parts of us are welcomed here and included. And there's one part of ourselves that sometimes is maybe seen to be the one thing that doesn't quite fit for Vipassana, the one thing we're supposed to not bring with us. And that's the use of our imagination, because we're supposed to see things as they are. But imagination has an important role, and certainly there's a distinction to be made about being lost in thought and ideas and fantasies and creative endeavors while you're trying to meditate, to make that distinction so you know. But there are ways of imagination helps us to stay present and be focused. And the Buddha was full of the use of imagination and evoking imagination to support people in the practice. And one way he did that was he used a lot of stories. He used a lot of metaphors. And it took me a long time, I'm still learning, that my introduction to Buddhism was like all these words were presented as technical Buddhist words. And I thought, this is, these are just real, formal or technical, precise words. It turns out a lot of these technical words in the original language were metaphors. And then we added meaning to them, and then we forgot they were metaphors. And so then we kind of, made them, real, I guess, made them specific, kind of. But we lost that sense of imagination that opens up the field in a wider way, and maybe also helps us to connect to ourselves and all the parts of ourselves. And that's one of the functions of the imagination in a healthy way, is to open to all the different aspects of us, inspire a deeper connection to ourselves, so that when we're really here, we're here with all of it. So the theme of this retreat is one of those things that I thought was just a technical thing, technical word. And just had to learn it and memorize what it meant, kind of. And the usual way, it's not a word, it's a couple of words. The word is faculties. And there's the teachings about the five faculties. And then there's one of these, here we are, these lists again. And lists are dry and boring and, and what are we doing with these lists? And it's like I'm back in school. Faculties, okay. But the word for faculty that we translated as faculty into English to make sense of it is a metaphor. And it's a word that comes from, it evokes the metaphor is that of the Indian god Indra. The word in Pali means something like of Indra. So Indriya, maybe you've heard, sometimes Dharma teacher will say Indriya and explain, that's the faculties. But and Indra was, and maybe is, the great kind of lord, or great kind of powerhouse of the gods, depending on where you look, to kind of sometimes called the controlling god, or the god who held sway over things, something. So when the Buddha is talking about the five Indriya, he's evoking this metaphor of something that has tremendous power, kind of like a god. So what if instead of calling them the five faculties, we call them something like the five divinities in us? I'll probably get, fired from Buddhism if I did too much of that. But what if we call it the five divinities within us? Then you get a very different feeling. Five faculties is just like, that's just like a technical psychological word. But if I said the theme of this retreat are the five divinities. What? And then we say, well, these five divinities are qualities that exist in you, What do you mean divine's in me? That's ridiculous. I'm supposed to just, see the breath. The belly rises, the belly falls. Come back. Your mind drifts off. Come back. What's this all about? But you get a whole different feeling of yourself if you have the idea there's five divinities within you, something divine, something special. And maybe you don't have to go that far to call them divinities, but there are five different powers within us. That's maybe a little bit now more, basic or something, rather than faculties. In fact, sometimes these faculties are in fact called the five powers when they've gotten strong. I think the distinction is faculties are more like potentials, more like abilities we have, and when they're strong, they become the five powers. And these are, so we're evoking something that's actually quite powerful and special inside, something which can control things or guide things or take a certain kind of control. That's the other thing that you're not supposed to do in Vipassana is to take control. We're control freaks, supposed to let go of control and allow things to be. Yes. And what these five faculties are talking about are not you taking control, not you being in charge exactly, but there are these wonderful abilities, wonderful parts of us that can be marshaled or can be evoked or be here. And they support, control, guide, kind of our enterprise and what we're doing. So these five faculties are, it's usually said, first one's called, called faith. Myself, I prefer the word confidence. We'll talk more about that later. Effort or endeavoring. Endeavor in something, put yourself into something. Difference between effort and endeavoring is endeavoring is effort done wholeheartedly in my vocabulary. And then mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Sometimes I like to call it insight instead of wisdom. So these are the five things that we're calling upon, evoking, developing in this practice, and they are the things that begin taking a certain kind of control or have certain amount of power. And the control they take or they offer is to keep us on track. Keep us so we're really engaged wholeheartedly in the practice so that we don't get, off track too easily. So faith or confidence is really a tremendous power that kind of means that kind of protects us from doubt and skepticism and questioning and confusion about things. If you have confidence about what you're doing, that's a power that you can bring with you. Endeavoring or effort, if that's really evoked, like I'm going to do this, and a closely associated idea with effort is persistence. And like I think that for me, I don't have a lot of, believe it or not, I don't know what you think of me, but I don't have a lot of great capacities in there. But one thing I have is persistence. And then other people think it's all these other things that, it's really persistence. If you do anything long enough, persistent enough, it looks like you're good at it. And so just persist, so there's the power of just hang in there, just doing it. And, the stomach gets hungry and, well, I might as well not meditate anymore. It's too late now in the afternoon and I really should just be thinking about supper. That's not persistence. You set yourself down to meditate and you're going to persist. You're going to do the thing. It's a power. And awareness, mindfulness is, to be committed to that, to have it strong, so strong that of course you want to be aware. And not only is it a birthright, but it's a power. It's like a clarity. It's like a wonderful coming home. The Buddha called mindfulness our birthland, our native land. Imagine that. If that's your native, you've come home. So you don't want to, you know, if you really see it that way and it's that strong and that palpable, then you're going to stay there and not get lost and distracted. And then concentration is, the word concentration is so unfortunate that we translate it as concentration. It's a unification of mind. It's a gathering together. Again, it's the idea of being whole, that which brings it all together so we're whole. What a divinity that is. This idea of including everything. Everything kind of gets pulled together and works together in harmony when there's so-called samadhi. And that also keeps us right here with the experience. If you're settled and whole, then it's really easy to stay present. And that's one of the functions of samadhi, is to really keep you undistracted. And then there is the wisdom or the insight. And the reason I like insight is wisdom, in my old kind of vocabulary, I very easily thought of it was, just you learn something and then you know it. You learn something wise and then you're wise. Read a good book. And then you get a lot of wisdom and you can go around the world wise. But insight implies something you're seeing, something you have insight into. And so it has to do with the immediacy right now. Wisdom is not learned wisdom we carry with us. The real wisdom that's enlightening, that's liberating, that's freeing, is the wisdom that we really see here and now. We see it in front of us. We see it within us. It's obvious. Oh, that's where the path is. That's what freedom is. That's where non-clinging is. And to have that kind of clarity of insight where we see where we get caught, we see how not to be caught, and see how important that is, and be able to see it moment by moment, that's a way to persist, that's a way to be inspired, have faith, that's a way to want to be here and show up and make effort and endeavor. And it becomes not so much, hard work to practice. It can be that way sometimes. But it's like a joy, or it's like, of course you do this. Of course you want to be free. So, Indriya. And the last thing I'll say about this wonderful metaphor is, I guess I've already said it some ways, but is that this is a very respectful way of talking about practitioners, which you all are. You know, in spite of the way many times we understand the teaching of no self or not self in the West, this is not a tradition that's going to diminish you in any kind of way and make you less of who you are. This is a tradition that really wants to respect and honor the strength and the vitality and the power and the richness, the value, the worth of every human being, each of you. And to sit with that sense of worth, that sense of dignity, that sense of like, I count and I'm here, is implied in this metaphor that you have these five divinities, these indriya, inside of you. Isn't that great? So should I just erase that? Because I kind of messed it up. I should go back and give a five faculties talk. So anyway, may each of you be a wonderfully powerful, inspiring divinity for this retreat. And if you're not, it's completely okay.
'Can you all hear me? How's the sound? Okay. I love that image of, would you say, native home, native land. Yeah. What if in the spirit of calling in the imagination to connect us to who and what we are, deeper parts of who and what we are. And that spirit, just entertaining the possibility of the refuges being our native land, our native home. A friend of mine will sometimes say that practice isn't a bliss ride. It's not to say that it's from beginning to end drudgery. It's not. There are so many moments where we touch into freedom, release, kindness. But like any journey or anything that's worthwhile, there are vicissitudes. And what and help see us through those vicissitudes? We so easily take refuge in things that in the moment feel like they're secure. Relationship, home, job, and yet keep changing, keep shifting, getting what we want. We do get what we want, but it's not what we anticipated. It's not manifesting in the way that we imagined. And that can be really hard on the heart. A heart is just longing for a place to rest and just trust. And what if the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is that native land where the heart can just trust and rest? So in this practice, we're invited to let go some of these other temporary refuges that we've been placing our heart on, to let them go gradually so that we can place our trust and our heart in something that's a little more secure. Buddha. So there's the historical Buddha. There's also what he represented. He's a human being just like you and me. And he awoke to the full potential of our human heart. A heart that is free of the forces of greed, aversion, and delusion. A heart that is at home, at rest in itself. And that the seeds of awakening are in each and every heart, and that you can take refuge in that. You can trust your own capacity to awaken. What if your own capacity to awaken is your native land, your native home? And the Dhamma are called the teachings of the Buddha, this path of practice, the truth, just starting to rest in the truth of how things are, not being in contention, or being some inner harmony with our experience as it is. There's this beautiful a phrase that I've only seen once in the suttas where it talks about practitioners when they hear a teaching on the Dhamma. They drink it in and eat it, as it were, by word and thought, that this Dhamma is nourishing. The Sangha, all the monastics that have kept this practice alive, that have passed it down through the generations, and that we inherit it and we get to practice with it. That we, I mean, we're in a room with 45, 50 people who have put the Dhamma at the center of their lives, have put awakening, moving towards wisdom, moving towards compassion at the center of their lives, or said that this is important and I'm going to orient towards this, and that we support each other in that process of awakening. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, what if they were our native home, that we could just, the heart could just fully rest and trust. And then we have these five trainings called the precepts. I have a teacher who talks about it as training the heart in being ethically attuned. So that just as the eyes can see and the ears hear, like this heart has this capacity to sense into, resonate with, attune to whatever situation it's in, whatever room it walks into, whatever environment it finds itself in, and is asking the question, what is for the benefit and well-being of myself? What is for the benefit and welfare of other people? What is for the benefit and welfare of myself and others? And then for all of life, that the heart can actually listen. Ask that question, listen, and know what's beneficial. Know what sustains. Know what will be for the welfare of all life. So we have these five trainings that help our heart grow in this capacity to attune, to listen. The first training is not killing, not physically harming living beings. We train not to steal and only to take what's offered. We train in celibacy while we're here on retreat, that we're just gathering the energy of our system, of our heart, that we can fully pour all that energy into the practice. We train in speaking the truth with kindness, refraining from speech that's harsh, false, divisive, hearing ourselves just to hear ourselves talk, letting go of speech that's harmful. And the way that that manifests here on retreat, the way we practice that, is through the noble silence. And lastly, refraining from using alcohol or drugs. And this supports a balance and a clarity of heart and mind. But this doesn't include prescribed medications. But some of us need these medications because it does support a balance and a stability and a clarity of mind. So we'll take the refuges and the precepts together. We'll do the homage first, homage to the Buddha. We'll chant it three times, the homage. The first time we'll chant it call and response, word for word, and then we'll I'll chant the full line, and then you'll chant it back. It'll be this call and response. So one word at a time this time around. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. I'll chant the whole line and you'll chant it back. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa.
Buddham
Buddham
Saranam Gacchami,
Gacchami.
Dhammam Sarana Saran
Gacchami,
Gacchami. Sangham
Saranam
Gacchami,
Gacchami.
Dutyanpi Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi.
Dutiyampi.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham.
Tatyanpi
Tatyanpi
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Tatyanpi
Tatyanpi
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Tatyanpi
Tatyanpi
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Now for the precepts. We'll do this in English, call and response. I train,
not to physically harm living beings.
I train, not to steal.
And only to take what is offered to me.
I train to be celibate while on retreat.
I train
to speak the truth,
with kindness.
To refrain from speech
that is false.
Harsh.
Divisive
and useless.
Commit to noble silence
and the relinquishing of all electronic devices.
I train
not to use alcohol or drugs
while on retreat.